Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen an overview of Shaivam and Siddhanta. The title is Continuation of Introduction to Shaivam, presented by Shiva Madhusudanan Kalaichelvam. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Now, itihasas, they are traditional accounts. They can be called as history, but the only difference is between history is generally Purana. Itihasa and Purana are different only on one note. We discussed this yesterday also, but I don't mind telling it again today. Itihasas are those historic accounts that are authored by authors when they saw it happen. They were a part of all that was happening when they authored it. So that's, and Puranas are authored several years after the happenings. So that is the basic differences. And as far as Indian tradition is concerned, we generally celebrate two itihasas. One is Ramayana and other is Mahabharata. Both these itihasas plays the role of helping us understand dharma, how dharma is to be protected at any level, how you don't compromise even an inch when it comes to dharma, dharma of different age groups, dharma for people who are practicing different occupations, dharma that changes with yuga. So all of this has been detailed. That's why these itihasas are long running, take a lot of diversions from the story track, go into many sub stories and branches out into many stories time and again to reiterate the greatness of God and the importance of dharma and how God protects people who stand by the side of dharma. So this is extremely important. So you have these two works. Predominantly people think that Ramayana and Mahabharata are Vaishnavite in nature because you have Rama and Krishna as avatars of Mahavishnu who have come down here. As the word goes, avatara, they have come down literally to be within amongst ourselves and perform all this. Now this is a concept that is not there in Saivite tradition because Shiva is never born to parents. So the concept of being born to someone is not there in Saivite tradition, but Mahavishnu, you have several occasions where he is born, and you have the Dashavatara, very popular, and there are several other avatars also discussed in Puranas apart from these 10 avatars. So in all these cases, Mahavishnu takes a form, he comes down, he is born, and he does a lot of leelas and finally goes back to his Sri Vaikuntha. So this is the concept with the Vaishnavites. Shiva is never born like that. So that is birth and being a part of this world to undergo all the troubles of Jiva and being associated with people of this samsara and all that is not there for the supreme most God. So Shiva is never, there's no concept of incarnation or taking an avatar in Shaiva. But throughout Ramayana and Mahabharata, there can be several occasions that can be seen where Shiva's intervention happens and how Shiva comes to the rescue of people who are caught. So there are many episodes that are discussed in both these itihasas which speaks about the presence of Shiva and how both these avatars, Krishna, Rama and Krishna, have prayed to Shiva. And there are other Puranas which comes on later, the Puranas part, where not just these two avatars but all the 10 avatars required the presence of Shiva, the grace and blessings of Shiva to finish their avatara here and go back to their heavenly abode, which is Vaikuntha for the Vaishnavites. So the Puranas speak about how all the 10 avatars performed Shiva Puja. There are, out of these 10, that it is split into two. The first 5 avatars went against Shiva, fought with him, only to be slain finally by Shiva and blessed to go back. So that is one part. Secondly, you have the remaining 5 avatars that understood the greatness of Shiva, did Shiva Puja to finish their avatara and go back to their heavenly abode. So the concept of Anugraham for the second 5 and Nigraham of the first 5 has been spoken about in many Puranas. And more interestingly, there are several that are believed to have been built as a part of the Shiva Puja by these avatars. Especially in the holiest city of Kanchipuram, you have a set of 10 temples which are named after these Dashavatara gods, which is venerated to be the places where all these 10 incarnations installed a Shivalingam and worshipped to get done with the Avatara course here. So you have the concept of Rama performing Shiva Puja at Rameshwaram, finally after Rama Ravana Yuddham and Ravana Samharam, how he comes back and installs the Shiva Puja, and how he refers to Shiva as Mahadeva, and all that is there. And in the course of Mahabharata, you have Shiva and Arjuna trying to go to Kailasa to have a divine glimpse of Rameshwara there, and also the story of how Arjuna had to perform a penance, a long-running penance, quite a challenging one, to get the Pashupata Astra, which was prescribed by none less than Krishna himself. So both, not just Rama and Krishna, but in the later Puranas, it speaks about how all the 10 avatars have prayed to Shiva to finish their avatara and go back. So you have several episodes that are done. There are commentaries on Ramayana and Mahabharata by with the perspective of a Shaivite. And there are several works by scholars which speaks about how these two works hail the greatness of, celebrate the greatness of Parameshwara. Then after the Itihasas, you have the Puranas. Puranas are extremely important compilation of Indian knowledge, Indic knowledge. They are 18 in number. Each of them are voluminous. The biggest of the Purana is Skanda, which is made up of 81,000 slokas. Each Purana runs to several slokas, but the speciality is that these Puranas have all been authored by none but. So that is an importance that the Puranas get. And the Puranas are an extensive compilation of very important Indic knowledge. So there are, and of course the Puranas, because of their vast nature, have given rise to Upapuranas, which are branched out Puranas from the main. So Puranas having branched out into Upapuranas and Stala Puranas. Puranas helps us to understand the true ethos of Vedas. That is how it is celebrated by scholars. Vedic knowledge gets over into, helps you attain knowledge at a very initial and primordial level, but understanding the depth of it, you will need the help of Puranas. Out of the 18 Puranas, 10 Puranas are celebrated to be that of Shaiva Puranas. Now this kind of a classification is more from a later period. Producing the list of 18 Puranas as such, there are enough debates. Some people accept Bhagavata as a Purana, Srimad Bhagavata as a Purana. Some people replace that with Devi Bhagavata. So I'm not getting into those debates here, therein. But this classification of 10 of these 18 Puranas as Shaiva Puranas, Shiva Purana, Linga Purana, Skanda, Varaha Purana, Vamana Purana, Matsya Purana, Kurma Purana, Brahmanda Purana, Brahma Purana, and Markandeya Purana are the 10 Shaiva Puranas. And then you have Agni Purana or Padma Purana and more. So that is Puranas, which describes more about other gods. You have 4 Vaishnava Puranas, Vishnu Purana, Narada Purana, Vayu Purana, all that is from the Vaishnavite part. But these 10 Puranas are Shaiva Puranas. Authority of Shiva. Shiva coming down to the rescue of all his devotees whenever they are in need. Various stories which speaks about how Shiva answered the calls of his devotees then and there. About sacred pilgrimage towns, various towns. For example, Skanda Purana is just filled with information on various pilgrimage towns, starting from Sri Kailasa all the way down south to Rameshwara and further. The greatness of Tirtha Yatra, the greatness of several rivers, the stories of how these rivers came into being, the accounts on how who are the rishis who have worshipped these shrines here in many pilgrimage centers. All this is discussed in the Skanda Purana. So these Puranas cannot just be shredded as compiled information which are all random. That cannot be the case. Most of the Puranas also speak about the concept of how the universe was created, how many years have been there, each of the yuga, the kalpas, all that is in general discussed in each and every Purana, time and again, as the initial chapters. Then they go into the describing the reason for singing the Purana, and who is doing it, what happens to the people who read it, and all that. So the Puranas seem to be very well documented to simply say that they are just compiled random information. That's not the case. They are extremely structured, and that is the reason why they are venerated, respected, and considered as important sacred text. So that is with the Sanskrit part of the traditional literature that speaks about the greatness of Shiva and Shaivam. Now let's go into the Tamil literature which speaks about him. We all know the Bhakti literature in Tamil, starting from Karaikal Ammayar and the Teva and Manikavachagar and all the other Tirumurai Acharyas who came later, is from a later period. But even before that, Tamil as a language was pretty much popular. It has become a classical language several centuries even before the times of Karaikal Ammayar. And the tradition of worship of Shiva and, you know, understanding from the Vedas, revering the Vedas and considering them to be sacred texts, worshipping Shiva as the ultimate god and all that has been a very prominent practice in Sangam literature since time immemorial. But for a fact, there is absolutely no mention to Shiva as Shiva by the same word anywhere in Sangam literature. The word Shiva is not directly used anywhere in Sangam literature. But that aside, every other feature of Shiva has been described in detail, starting from his hair locks, the matted hair locks, the red ochre shaded matted hair locks of Shiva, his Trinetra, and Surya and Chandra being his eyes, and Shiva's the vilva leaves that are used to worship Shiva, and how he has the alakala poison that is stored in his throat, and the name as Neelakantan that came from there, and Shiva holding the Trishula, the deer and the antelope and the axe in his hands as his divine weapons, and Nandi being his Vahana, how Shiva is accompanied by Uma Bharvati as his Shakti, how Shiva gave half of his physique to Uma to raise up as Ardhanarishwara. All of these very prominent features of Shiva is sung time and again. Shiva dance as the cosmic dance, and various other occasions where Shiva danced, the different names for each of the dance that Shiva performs, all of it has been detailed out. Shiva time and again is referred to as a person who is beyond the concept of birth and death. He is never created. He has always been there. In fact, he is the one who creates, sustains and destroys. All these greatness of Shiva as identified in the Vedas, the Upanishads, the later Puranas and Itihasas, all of it has been said the same way in Sangam literature also. We can be very sure that the culture here, the civilization here in south of India, so the people of South India who were here, the civilization that was here, had a very thorough and clear knowledge on the Vedic scriptures, because their own compositions reiterate the stories same way. And various episodes like how Shiva came to the call of Markandeya helped him, and how Shiva burned down the Tripura Asuras, the three demons, by that mere smile of his. And Shiva, how Ganga, the garva that Ganga as a river had when she came down from the celestial worlds, were arrested by Shiva in his matted hair locks. All of these episodes are time and again referred to in the Sangam literature in various places. Shiva is referred to as Tavishadai Polinda Arundavatton, the great person who is always in penance with matted hair locks. Mukkat Shelvan, the Virupaksha, the Trinetra aspect of Shiva. Karaimidattu Annal, the great one who has a blue blot in his throat, that is the because of the consumption of Alahala. Neela Manimidattu Annal, once again, whose throat is blue in color. Mudu Mudalvan, the most ancient and the foremost person. Neelameni Valilai Bhagattu Oruvan, the one who has accompanied Uma as a half of his own self. Malai Talai Vaitavar, the one who stores water or Ganga in his hat, in his hair locks. Paingat Parpan. Parpan is a word which is used to refer to a person who is extremely matured, intellectually matured and seasoned and all that. So he is called as Paingat Parpan. Pungam Urbavan, the one who whose vehicular mount is a bull. Marumidattu Annal, once again, the throat has the alakala and the blue color that has come out of it. Mukkanan. Alamar Chelvan, Shiva as Dakshinamurti, who seated under the Alamaram, even that is referred to. So forms, physical attributes, several heroic deeds where his valor was brought out, or the Ashtavira Krityas of Shiva, all of that has been explained in detail in Sangam literature. The coming down of Ganga, Shiva as Ardhanarishwara, Shiva as Dakshinamurti, Shiva as Tripura Samhari, Shiva as Kala Samhari, all of that has been sung time and again. Now to specific references, Kalithogai is one of the Sangam literature. Now Sangam literature is believed to have been authored between 3rd century BCE to the 3rd century CE. That's roughly 2300 years back to 1700 years back. That 600 years timeline is when these 18 texts have been authored. There is another common misconception that all ancient Tamil works, no, that's not the case. Even ancient works like that of Thirukkural is not a part of the Sangam literature. When you call something as Sangam literature, it is only the Ettuthogai and the Pattupattu, a compilation of 8 works, another set of 10 poems. Totally 18 titles, the compilation of those 18 titles alone can be called as Sangam literature. So here, Kalithogai is one such piece, and therein, that work, the invocatory verses, the first work, in any great work generally starts with an invocation. And in many cases, in many works, Shiva becomes the god who is invoked in the opening verses of these texts. And that particular work, Kalithogai, the invocatory verses are very tastefully done and a long-running poem which speaks about half a dozen occasions where Shiva performed different dances. One dance in the cremation ground, one dance for the cosmic origin of the universe, one dance when he was boarded the chariot for when he was on his way to Tripura Samhara, only to be revered by Brahma as the charioteer. So all these different occasions in which he danced. And the poem is very tastefully done to ask Parvati as to what was her role when Shiva was performing this dance. Various instruments that accompany Shiva's dance are detailed out in the invocatory verses. So Shiva as the primordial source of energy and his cosmic dance being the reason for the sustenance of the universe, and several occasions where Shiva danced his cosmic dance accompanied by Parvati, Isatandava Sakshini as we call her, and what is that instrument that she played, because she is the Shakti of Shiva. So the divine couple together and their role as to perform the dance is venerated in the invocatory verses of Kalithogai. Kalithogai also refers to the ancient Tamil tradition of wearing a pendant to the little kids at home, for the toddlers, the infants, toddlers and the little kids at home, with embossed with the image of Nandi and the holy weapons of Shiva to ward off evil eyes and to ensure that the kid is healthy and it is not affected by any illness or otherwise. There was this ancient Tamil tradition where a pendant made out of gold embossed with the image of Nandi and the holy weapons of Shiva was used to be tied around the neck of the infants and toddlers. And there is another important reference to how an elephant which was tied outside the temple of Madurai was smeared with white ashes. So the concept of Bhasma Dharana, not only for men but for even an elephant in the service of the Lord, has been mentioned. And quite interestingly, there are several poets who are called by very popular names of Shiva. There is one particular poet who is referred to as Venbudiyar. Literally translated, that means that one person who has smeared the holy ashes. Bhasma Dharana, the person with Bhasma Dharana, he is called as Venbudiyar, white holy ash, the person who has smeared it. One more person is referred to as Perail Muruvalar. Muruval literally means a grin, a very simple version of smile. Eil means compound walls. Perail speaks about tall compound walls. Now we all know how during Tripura Samhara, Shiva didn't trouble himself by actually fighting a war, but having parked the chariot in the war field, gave a very simple smile. He just grinned. And that grin was powerful enough to burn the three demons to ashes. So this particular beautiful act expressing the valor of Shiva has been coined into a fantastic Tamil name, and a poet has been called by that name. And so then you have cases where Shiva is just referred to as Irayanar. There are several occasions where Shiva himself has been treated as a poet, several verses which are believed to be authored by Shiva, which is a part of the Sangam literature. And we all know how Shiva was the presiding leader of the first Tamil Sangam when it was established. After Shiva, it was handed over to Subramanya, who is also considered as an embodiment of Shiva. The jnana and all that from Tejas and all that from Shiva is a part of Subramanya. And how Subramanya conducted the proceedings of the Tamil Sangam, and how he taught Agastya, the foremost member of Tamil Sangam, the grammar for Tamil, as ordained by Shiva. So Tamil as a language and its evolution has always considered Shiva to be the central element around whom the language and the civilization as an extension evolved around. Then there is another beautiful work called Madurai Kanchi, which speaks about the greatness of the city of Madurai. How colorful the city was, the culture of Madurai, the people of Madurai, their activities, and all that is detailed out in this work called Madurai Kanchi, where I'm just translating it into the Tamil verses into English. It speaks about the evening worship in the temples of Madurai. At the twilight festival, musical instruments are played and abundant offerings are given according to unchanging traditions to Shivan with an axe, who created the five elements of water, land, fire, wind and the ether, and to gods with faultless bodies, bright flowers that do not fade, eyes that do not blink, and they are given fragrant food offerings. So Shiva is considered to be the most important god, around whom there are other gods who are enshrined. So the first offerings by the citizens of Madurai, with all the best of the flowers that they had and all that offerings, was first made to Shiva, followed by other gods, as a daily ritual, evening ritual in Madurai. And there are two very classic examples of temples built to Shiva which existed during even the Sangam period. One is from a work called Malai Padukadam. That's a part of the Sangam literature. And Malai Padukadam sings about an ancient Tamil king who probably ruled before the Common Era. That's roughly a little before 2000 years, from a very small village called Chengam, situated near the Arunachala Kshetra, near Trivannamalai. It's 30 kilometers from Trivannamalai. And this particular king was called as Nannan Sei Nannan. This work speaks about the greatness of his city, his rule, his benevolence and all that. And there are a few lines which speaks about the worship of Shiva by this king called Nannan in a temple situated on a hill. This hill is still there, and a very active temple for Shiva is also there. This hill is called as Parvata Malai or Parvata Giri. It's a very challenging task to climb up this hill. Very, very challenging in fact. But there is an ancient small temple situated right up there. So for people who say that there is no direct reference to worship of Shiva, or in temples, especially in Sangam literature, there are two examples, very prominent examples, which speaks about ancient temples which are have walked up to the hillock, had a darshan of Shiva as beautiful. It calls him as Kari Undi Kadavul. Literally translated, that means that god who consumed poison, the one who ate poison, who drank Kari Undi Kadavul, built on top of Parvatamalai. And this king, who was ruling from a place called Chengam, walked up to this temple every day and worshipped Shiva there. There is one more reference which speaks about, and this place, this reference to Shiva, calls him as that god with a third eye in his forehead, Virupaksha. All that is said. So there is no doubt that it can speak about some other god. Kari Undi Kadavul is Shiva there, and his temple is still there. Then there is another reference by Avvayar, who praises Adiyaman, the king who was an ancient Sangam period king, who was ruling from places near today's Dharmaburi in the northwestern part of Tamil Nadu. And she says that you should live all along timeless. And he says that your benevolence should be remembered as that of Shiva. And Jnana Sambandhar mentions to a temple called Tirumayindicharam in his Ketra, in his compositions. And this Mayindicharam is referred to in inscriptions the same way, in a place near the place where it is believed that Adiyaman's fort existed. So this Mayindicharam, which Jnana Sambandhar refers to later, should have been the temple which Adiyaman, the great Sangam king, worshipped. So Mayindicharam and Malai Padukadam's reference to Parvatamalai are two very important examples from Sangam literature. Then in popular works like Shilapadigaram and Manimegalai also, direct references to Shiva and Shaiva traditions are there. Manimegalai speaks about how the people were initiated into the five-syllable Panchakshara mantra and the Ashtakshara also. So the understanding Panchakshara as an important mantra for initiation comes into it. There is a reference to the great Chera king who was ruling from Vanchi, which is the capital of the Cheras, wherein he accepts the prasada from a Shiva's temple and wears it right on his crown. Maybe the prasadas were the garland that was sent by from the temple. So he accepts it right on his crown. Immediately after, in a while, prasada from Vishnu's shrine comes. people identify that Vishnu shrine to be Trivananthapuram probably. That Prasada comes and he only accepts the garland on his shoulders. Now people who have taken Shaiva Diksha can still visit Vishnu shrines, but take the prasadam only at their shoulder level. No prasadam of but for that of Shiva goes to be carried on the head of a person who is a Shaivite with his Diksha. So this particular Chera king has very clearly shown that the practice of honoring the prasada by wearing it on his head has been there, and his difference of the way he treated Shiva Prasada and Vishnu Prasada is very clearly seen. Shiva is referred to in the Shilapadikaram as Pirava Yakai Periyon, that great one who is beyond the concept of birth. There is no physical form or a concept of birth that comes in when you speak about Shiva. He is referred to as the person with the third eye on his forehead, and his temples have been there in ancient Tamil capitals. So that is about how Shiva is directly referred to in Sangam literature and in post-Sangam works like that of Shilapadikaram and Manimekale and other works. Now the closing part for today, we are getting into the Shivagama. So in today's session, we've understood how Shiva worship has been there in many parts of the world, not restricted only to India. In tribal traditions, we started with the menhirs, historic times, and pretty much there in tribal traditions, which is still there, examples of the Australian aborigines and all that. And then about Indus Valley civilization and in neighboring countries where Indian civilization was kind of extended, how in many excavations we have discovered several images of Shiva, Shivalingam and ritual vessels and all that. And in Indus particularly, how the Pasupati seal and terracotta Shivalingams and all that was discovered. And several of them, not just one or two, but many of them have been discovered. They're still exhibited, well documented and all that. Then we discussed about the Vedas and how starting from the Rig Veda, the classification of the Vedas and the role of each of the Vedas and how Shiva is represented by different forms in each of the Veda. Yajur Veda and the Karma Bhaga, which is there, the rituals and the yajnas to be performed. Most importantly, Sri Rudram as a part of it, and the most celebrated part of the Vedas, in fact, where the Panchakshara comes in first and all that. Then Samaveda and its importance when it comes to how Shiva himself enjoys conducted chant of Samaveda, and the Brahmanas and the Upanishads, how Shaiva traditions have been celebrated as an extension into the Puranas and Itihasas, how Itihasas are also, though they look Vaishnavite predominantly, how Shivaparatvam has been time and again explained in the Itihasas, and then into Puranas, the 10 Shaiva Puranas, about covering several episodes in the lives of great saints, devotees of Shiva, and Shiva's immediate attendance whenever the devotees call out for him and to rescue them, and how even not just, and the grace of Shiva according to Puranas is not restricted only to rishis or kings or noblemen or learned souls or even human beings. There are several Stalapuranas which speaks about how animals, birds, insects, reptiles, all of them have done Shiva Puja and how they have managed to at times it's even moksha or sometimes special siddhis as seen best by Shiva himself. Then we entered into the Tamil literature part, Sangam literature, starting from the 18 compiled works, Pattu Paattai and Ettu Thogai, and how Shiva is called by different names. Though the name of Shiva does not appear directly, how other methods of referring to him, all that is there. Then we saw about the kavyas like Manimekale and Shilapadikaram and Manimekale. In Manimekale also, there is a section predominantly Jain and Buddhist works, both Shilapadikaram and Manimekale. It is nothing special when a Shaivite work or a Shaivite poet sings the greatness of Shiva. These two works especially, timeless classics of Tamil language, Shilapadikaram and Manimekale, are considered to be authored by Jain and Buddhist authors. Two religions which has tried their best to bring down the greatness of Shiva, and they have constantly been debating with Shaiva traditions. But even in those works, greatness of Shiva has been beyond doubt celebrated. There is no ambiguity in it at all. The way the various characters in the epics speak about Shiva and his greatness, Shaiva tradition practices and all that. Manimekale, there is one complete section about people from different philosophy coming forward and discussing and debating, where a Shaiva Vadi is one of the characters who speaks about the concept of Shiva being beyond time, the concept of time, and how he is, his third eye, Ashtamurti Tattvam, and all that is spoken about. So all that has been understood, accepted, and was in practice here. So this amount of bhakti and devotion and worship, rituals, all that as cultivated in the Vedas, Vedas, Upanishads, Puranas and Itihasas, all that parallelly gave rise to a more structured mode of worship called as the Agamas. So that's where we are zeroing it down for today. And here the Agamas, which are celebrated mostly in the southern parts. Now that's another common thought, that Agamas are restricted only to South India. But we will in tomorrow's lecture see how Agamas have a pan-India approach in through various sections that are discussed in the Agamas. And how Agamas speak about not just worship or rituals. It goes into speaking about identifying a place for construction for a Shiva temple, construction activities, architectural elements, and prayaschittas to be done when there is something an undue happening, or you know, during calamities, how do you protect a temple, what do you do after the calamity, festivals to be conducted, all that. There is also the Jnana Bhaga, which speaks about the philosophy, and a Yoga Bhaga, and so the different forms, different Agamas, their historic evolution, all that we will see in tomorrow's lecture. And so there are the 28 Agamas, the Mula Agamas, and the several Upagamas that have branched out of it, and how Agamas are true treasure trove of Shaivite knowledge, all that, and how Vedas and Shivagamas, we call them as twins. Veda Shivagama is how we call it, refer to it. So that means there is always a bridge that connects the Vedas and the Agamas. We will see about that also in tomorrow's intro session, and then get into the Agamas and what they convey to us. That's for today's session. And till then, my namaskarams. Ponnum meiporulum taruvanai, bogamum thiruvum punarpanai, pinnai enpidayai poruppanai, pidayalam tavira panippanai, inna tanmayan endru ariyavonna emmanai, elivanda piranai, annam vaihum vayal palanattu ani aaruranai marakkalumame, vaalha andanar vanavar aninam, veelha tanpunal vendanum moonguha, aalga thiyadellam, arannamame shoolga vayahamum tuyardhirgave, வான்முகில் வழாது பெய்க மலிவளம் சுரக்க மன்னன் கோன்முறை அரசு செய்க குறைவிலாது உயிர்கள் வாழ நான்மறை அறங்கள் ஓங்க நத்தவம் வேள்வி மல்க மேன்மைகள் சைவநீதி விளங்குக உலகமெல்லாம் மூர்த்தியெல்லாம் வாழி எங்கள் மோன குருவாழி அருள் வார்த்தை என்றும் வாழி அன்பர் வாழி பராபரமே எல்லாம் ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ கிருபை ஸ்ரீ தியாகராஜ மகாராஜோ விஜயதே ஆரூரா தியாகேஷ நமஸ்காரம்.